Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. I'm JJ Bryce, one of your co-hosts who has been notoriously absent this summer. Here as always with, or here as not always with Dan Roberts. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. It's great to have you back to talk some Bills football. We have a lot of catching up to do. Unlike our previous off seasons where we have been had a constant line of text communication going back and forth and phone calls catching up about the squad, we literally have not talked any Bills together on the same pod or in the same conversation all summer. So I am it's great to finally get back into it with you.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's kind of a interesting off season. The Bills, of course, being on Hard Knocks, a lot of different developments with a roster, and a very defensive heavy roster and rookie class that we can talk through. And, you know, I know that we've had a number of friends of the pod, and I'm all as always ever thankful for those guys to come on and talk some football with you when I was unable. So, yeah, I mean, where do you want to begin with this offseason? We're recording on August 21st. We're the last week of the preseason games. This Saturday against the Buccaneers happens. And then it's kind of off to the races with the season. Cut day is next Saturday.
Let's work our way from the present into the past, because I think there are some notable things that came out of Bill's practice today. I think most importantly, potential injury situation with Trey White. Trey White goes down today at practice, JJ. It appears to be a right leg, right foot, lower body injury. We know that Trey, unfortunately, has a history of struggling with these injuries. It's part of what ended his original stint with the Bills a couple of years back. Bills were hoping for a healthy season out of him, hoping that he could elevate the floor of this cornerback room that outside of Christian Benford last season really got picked on by opposing teams. But it looks like with the injury to Trey, some uncertainty now as to who is going to play opposite Benford, given who is left on the roster. JJ, what we don't know is what the type of injury is, if he will miss time, if he does miss time, how much. But given Trey White's recent history with injuries of this nature, I think it's a little bit unsettling, and it opens up a lot of questions about, do the Bills need to now make a move here a few weeks before the season starts to go get a reliable CB2 to play opposite Christian Benford?
I think that the Bills need to do something at CB2, but that thing might be thrusting Maxwell Hairston into starting because I think
when he's healthy.
Yeah,
right.
I think that they've probably at this point decided if they're watching the same games I am, they've probably decided Hairston needs to start across from Christian Benford. And Trey White being injured it's super unfortunate, because I think we both appreciate what Trey has been as a player for this team. But the story of him getting older and having repeated severe, serious lower body injuries year over year, and then struggling with rehab and coming back and looking a little bit slower, a little bit older, as is the case with so many players, this may be the way his career ends if this is another serious one, because he bounced around on different teams while rehabbing and trying to come back to form last year. And the Bills were excited to bring him back as healthy as he's been in four seasons. And, you know, if this is something, you know, I guess he was hopping off on one leg and then was taken by a cart to the locker room, which I think Thad Brown pointed out may not have been because of severity. It might have been because it's a long way to walking up a ramp from the, you know, practice facility back to the locker room. So I don't know. We'll see what comes of it, but I think that it's probably Maxwell Hairston. I think they're hopeful that his injury resolves in a way and he doesn't go back, you know, backwards in any way when the team starts the season. But I do think that there's a chance, you know, if we're looking around, Asante Samuel Jr. still out there. Rasul Douglas, you know, maybe he rides again with the Bills, even though he looked pretty cooked in the last 4 to 6 games of the season with the Bills. Stephon Gilmore, another retread that they could consider back, who has had some actual solid seasons in his later career.
He's been effective.
He's been probably an average to just above average starting outside corner for the last 2 or 3 seasons. And then James Bradbury would be the classic Sean McDermott hire in this situation. Somebody who is way past his prime, but would you know, might be able to do some stuff. Who's the former Carolina Panthers CB who got trucked by Derrick Henry that we had on the team for one
Josh
season?
Norman.
Josh Norman. Mm-hmm. James Bradbury would be like the Josh Norman redemption arc, which was a one season kind of fizzle and failure.
Keep going.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I think that that's where they're at. Next man up, Dane Jackson, Jamarcus Ingram, Dorian Strong. This could be Dorian Strong's Christian Benford story, where he is drafted in a late round, is forced into an opportunity starting, you know, opposite on the outside, and never relinquishes that position.
And that would be great if that's the way this arc ended up going. And I agree with you. The answer is probably in the long run, over 17 games, Hairston, when he does get healthy and when he does come back. But even when camp started, the Bills were coaching him really, really hard. Like, he was still struggling with core concepts of the defense, his positioning in zone in particular. I mean, the athletic traits, the pop, the speed, the closing speed in particular, something we haven't seen a Bills DB be able to do across the middle in some time. I mean, it's all there with Hairston. I don't know that this Bills coaching staff, though, JJ, is going to pull the trigger on putting him in the starting lineup the moment he is healthy. I think it's more likely they're going to platoon him in, get him comfortable. If he is given a clean bill of health by week one or by week two, I could see it be as far as maybe week six or even seven before we see Hairston in there. And I think they roll with a rotation of Dane Jackson and Jamarcus Ingram, two guys who we know exactly what we're getting out of them, and the Bills like predictability out of those positions. I think we roll the platoon of those two guys until Hairston gets not only the clean bill of health, but the blessing of this Bills coaching staff to be able to take the reins opposite Christian Benford. I think that's more likely than not. I'm not ruling out a free agent CB at this particular point either, but I mean, listen, Rasul Douglas gives you exactly what Trey White was giving you, and at least here in the preseason. Love Trey. This is not Trey slander, but the reality is that game he played against the Giants in the preseason, getting cooked across the middle. Jackson Dart regularly targeting Trey White in one-on-one coverage. Like, it, the floor of both Douglas and White to me is the same, and to me it's a wash, and I would stay away from Douglas. Asante Samuel Jr. doesn't have the tackling chops that the Bills typically look for in the run game, and specifically from their cornerbacks. Gilmore is the only one maybe out there I'd take a flyer on, because again, he's been really effective. His closest defender metrics, while those are really difficult to sort website to website, you know, be it PFF or be it FTN, his closest defender metrics are still pretty good for a guy his age. To me, out of the free agent group that's available, he brings the highest floor to the squad, but also probably the heftiest price tag too.
Sure, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, things you don't want to cheap out on. Hiking boots, tents, and outside starting cornerbacks. You pay for what you get, right? Like, you want it, tools, right? Like, there are things that you are worth their cost, and Stephon Gilmore, in a moment against Patrick Mahomes for the AFC championship, having that extra yard of closure, you know, speed, or that extra length to bat down a ball, that might be the trick, right? That might be worth $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So a lot of wait and see here. We got to see what the nature of Trey White's injury is. God forbid it is season ending. I think at that point, the Bills got to make a move. I just don't think you can roll in with Dane Jackson, Jamarcus Ingram, Dorian Strong, and Maxwell Hairston as your rotation for 17 straight games. I think you need one more vet.
Well, and I think too that if in fact this is a season-ending injury for Trey White, it's probably a career-ending injury for Trey White.
Right.
Just based on age, based on the way his abilities looked even at what we'd consider full health this summer. So.
Yeah, hopefully not the case. Wishing the best to Trey. Throwing our thoughts out there to him. We love Trey. He is a Buffalo Bill through and through. And we hope that whatever it is that ails him right now, it is a quick and speedy recovery, and he can get back on the field for the squad. JJ, speaking of on the field, there is a younger member of the Bills secondary that has had issues getting on the field due to injuries, both last offseason and this offseason. And he has been called out by one Sean McDermott. And I, of course, am speaking about my 2024 draft crush, one Cole Bishop, who the Bills spent a second round pick on. Injuries have limited his availability, and when he has been on the field, the athletic traits are there, JJ, similar to Maxwell Harrison early on. However, the processing speed within the scheme is not there yet. He looked downright atrocious against the Chicago Bears. Now, granted, the Bills are not running anything spectacular with regard to coverage. They're not concealing any coverage. They're basically asking their guys to win their one-on-one matchups. But Cole had a hard time even doing that against a Caleb Williams-led Bears squad. So, JJ, what are your thoughts on the Cole Bishop situation? There are calls coming from Bills Mafia for Justin Simmons to get signed to the squad ASAP. Simmons, who you and I both advocated for joining the team last offseason, did not have his finest moments in Atlanta last season, and that is why he still finds himself on the market. That being said, great scheme fit, the type of leadership skills that we know the Bills are looking for in that position room, and we know he's got familiarity with our style of defense. So, JJ, where are you at? Is all this Cole Bishop stuff with Sean McDermott a motivation tactic, or is there a real possibility that they're bringing in yet another safety to compete for the starting job opposite Taylor Rapp?
Oh my gosh. The thing that I think about every time I start thinking about Cole Bishop is how we'd forgot that we were, or we didn't know we were in the good old days when we were in the good old days with Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer in their prime for years, where like nobody even needed to talk about safety. It was just like, it was like a completely forgotten thing. Well, those guys will be back and we'll think about corner, right? Like, or we'll think about defensive line because we have that completely locked down with an all pro or two all pros. And so that's one thing I think about often when I'm thinking about Cole Bishop. And then also, you know, I had a very polite, friendly exchange with somebody else in Bills Mafia because I referenced something somewhat recently. There was a research that came out that tied certain genetic markers to prevalence of soft tissue injuries. And I was like, is it possible he's got the dinged up gene, right? Like the thing that they've identified that could make it easier for you to pull a hammy or do this, do that. And the person astutely pointed out that he had a fracture last year, and this year was a soft tissue. So it probably isn't genetic because it was two different things that aren't both tied to the gene. But my point stands. His availability is his least attractive ability right now. He has not been around when the Bills have needed him to be around. And he continues to struggle when he is. He looked like he was shaking off a lot of rust. You know, after rewatching the Chicago game and his 13 or 15 snaps or whatever it was, he was getting absolutely no help from Joe Andreessen and some of his other players. That the way that the McDermott defense works, all the players have to know where their space and where their help is and squeeze routes in certain ways. And they were playing a very, very vanilla defense. They were every third down was a blitz with a shell coverage. And they were picking it apart for good reason. It was pretty easy to diagnose what the Bills were trying to do. And then the players the Bills were putting out there were like Brandon Codrington starting at outside corner, right? Like, which is not an answer ever. And so, in that regard, being one of the few what I would consider starting caliber players on the field at any one time, Cole had a hard time. He made some mistakes. But I don't believe that Justin Simmons is an answer because he plays deep free. That's his kind of bread and butter. He's not a strong safety. The Bills are looking for their strong safety. They're looking for their like thumper coming down to cover tight ends, squeezing the crossing routes in the middle of the field, closer to the line of scrimmage. And that was both Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop's strength. But I think that Cole Bishop is a little behind on the communication required of the free position. And the necessity of that position to get everybody else lined up, they're leaning on Taylor Rapp for that quite a bit more. Now, if Taylor Rapp could stop injuring the other players on his team because he's just a heat-seeking missile from that position at all times, that would be great because I guess that happened again in practice today where he whacked Elijah Moore or somebody.
Oh, they got into a fight. And
there was a scuffle. Yeah.
Yeah, Rapp got ejected from practice. Yeah.
So bad news there. The safety position's falling apart. I don't think Justin Simmons is the answer. I actually think that they may have an opportunity with their rookie Jordan Hancock, who has looked pretty good in spot starts, as a potential replacement for that strong safety position. That was always his better fit coming out of Ohio State anyway, was that kind of safety nickel hybrid, which plays naturally closer to the line, covers more slots, covers more tight ends. And so who knows, we could get a bright lining, you know, roster move of a rookie replacing a much beleaguered second round pick from last year. Though I don't think either of us would want that, because I think we both were really excited when Cole Bishop was the selection.
Yeah, I don't think you give up on a kid with his traits this early, but man, it just seems like the Bills are able to mold UDFAs, 6th, 7th round guys with limited athletic traits into really high functioning, high caliber NFL secondary players. And when they get a Kyer Elam or a Cole Bishop, or jury's out on Maxwell Hairston, right? But you saw the same trends of what was happening with Cole Bishop last season, happening with Hairston and the way they were coaching him, his lack of processing ability. When they get these like exemplary athletes into these secondary roles, they fail to seem to be able to integrate those traits into their scheme. And I don't want to knock the coaching staff like too much, but like Vic Fangio has freaks everywhere on the field. You know what I mean? And he is adjusting his scheme in Philadelphia to allow for those guys to do what they do within, I think, the guidelines, right, of his general scheme. The Bills seem to force guys in a lot of ways to adapt to their scheme as the only way that they can fit into the defensive schematic. And at some point, when you have athlete after athlete, and the number one thing keeping you from getting over the hump against Kansas City is that they're faster than you, or you don't have a star on defense. Guys with these traits, guys with Bishop's traits, Harrison's traits, they're the ones that develop into your stars. When you year after year continue to fail to develop guys with those traits and those skills and that caliber of athlete, it does really make you wonder if there is a rigidity to the scheme that needs to change if the Bills are ultimately going to get over this hump, right? All that being said, Cole Bishop, I think it's too early to kind of throw him out the door at this point. The Justin Simmons thing, though, to me, it's intriguing, and here's why. Both Rapp and Bishop, they play better closer to the line of scrimmage. And to your point, Simmons is that Micah Hyde free safety, like over-the-top guy. If you can maximize Cole Bishop by letting him go back to doing what he was doing at Utah for the majority of his junior year there, which was be that box safety, be that strong safety type, as a way to more comfortably integrate him into the scheme, I do think it's a valid to look into someone like Simmons. And I don't mind that he takes away snaps from someone like Rapp, but I think the Bills coaching staff really likes Taylor Rapp. They really like Rapp and what he brings to the table. And I don't know that they would make that move. But I do like a situation where Cole Bishop maybe is a little bit more of a box safety as a way to integrate him in here.
Yeah, I think we both agree that that's his more natural position. And, you know, when you're talking about Kyer Elam, Cole Bishop, the way they're coaching Maxwell Hairston, it made me think of an analogy to my life. I am a chubby person of muddled European descent. If I didn't develop a personality, I would never have landed my beautiful wife.
The analogies are back, folks.
They do best with 5th and 6th round players who are instinctual without elite traits, because their defensive scheme is built around people who had to develop a good instinct for finding the ball because they never had the speed to get there. The Buffalo Bills players who succeed are the JJ Bryces of the dating world. And this could be a problem. And we see this year over year that they like bring these like 5th, 6th, 7th undrafted free agents into reasonable, rational NFL starters, but then they completely fumble the ball with somebody who is like an outstanding athlete who never had to develop those traits or instincts and could just rely on their athleticism to get there. They don't know how to use those guys. They don't know how to put them in position to succeed. And so I really hope that their outcomes are as good as mine in this my first analogy of the season.
But that always seems to be the thing that keeps the Bills from taking that next step. We always say, where's the speed? As we watch Rasul Douglas get burned across the middle of the field, where's the speed? Where's the athleticism? Where's the high traits guys that can put this defense over the top? You know what I mean? And then when they're there in the lap of the squad, I don't know what happens. Yeah, I don't know what happens. But I love the analogy. I love the fact that the analogies are back with you. I love the fact that WebMD Dr. JJ Bryce is also back.
Oh, yeah.
As you're trying to genetically decode Cole Bishop's DNA.
I'll dive into all that stuff. Wherever the nether regions of the internet takes me to figure out ways to identify the gaps in the Buffalo Bills plan for finally securing a Super Bowl, I'm going to get there, folks, for you, for the fans.
I love it, man. Along that path to the Super Bowl, the Buffalo Bills, as we have seen this offseason, JJ, have not been adverse to reunions with former players. We mentioned Trey White. We've mentioned Dane Jackson. There is another former Bill who is in the house today at One Orchard Park, or One Bills Drive in Orchard Park, and that would be Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis has visited the Steelers since parting ways with the Jags this offseason. He's visited with the Bills. I think he's made two visits to the Steelers this offseason. And he is looking at his options about what squad he wants to join before the season starts here. JJ, your thoughts on a Gabe Davis reunion with Buffalo Bills?
I don't want anybody who has a 50% catch rate taking snaps away from Keon Coleman or Joshua Palmer, or even Curtis Samuel or Elijah Moore, or LaVisca Chenault or KJ Hamler. Like, name any number of wide receivers. Tyrell Shavers. I don't want a single snap that Tyrell Shavers would otherwise have gotten to go to somebody like Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis is a Mac Hollins-esque tenacious run blocker. He seems like he was a good player in terms of developing rookies. He seems like he was a good team guy. He just doesn't have the talent or the skill set that the Bills need to get over the hump. He's not going to, given the wide receiver room that they have right now, he's not going to be enough of an added value to spend money on him, money the Bills don't have. Reportedly, the reason that he did not sign in Pittsburgh is because the cash wasn't there, that they didn't offer him what he considered to be his market value, which feels like a weak positioning and bargaining strategy as a player who signed a pretty big major multi-year deal, and then the team gave up on him after 1 year, right? Like, okay, man, like, I don't know if you are exactly the hottest product on the market right now, that somebody was able to eat dead cap to get rid of you. You felt more valuable off their roster than on.
Yeah, read the room a little bit, Gabe Davis, but you nailed it. And it's the two pieces about Coleman and Shavers that I agree with you, I think, the most intensely. Keon Coleman is trying to plus up that Gabe Davis role on the squad, that big contested catch, not going to get a lot of separation, but bruiser type of wide receiver downfield. And anything kind of like what the Bills did when they brought in Emmanuel Sanders, right? After Davis had a couple of breakout games towards the end of his rookie year, they bring in Emmanuel Sanders, and it stunts Davis's development, and it takes away meaningful snaps and targets from Davis in his second season. And he never really recovered from that. To me, it would be counterintuitive when you've got this guy in Coleman, who, yes, is a high variance player right now, but has shown the traits to be an elite contested catch guy, at least a human highlight reel once every couple of games. To me, that is a higher floor to start from than what Gabe Davis brings you, even at his best back when he was Buffalo. So to me, I agree with you. Taking snaps away from Coleman, counterintuitive. And they've had Tyrell Shavers just sitting there for the past couple of years. I love what he brings to the table. I mean, what are we always saying? We are looking for a wide receiver with size, with speed, with athleticism, that catches everything that Josh can throw their way. And Tyrell Shavers, with the exception of a couple of drops in camp and a couple in preseason games, he seems to fit that mold. And they're talking themselves out of putting him on the roster because they don't like his special teams applicability or whatever it is, right? To me, I would rather see big body targets like Coleman and Shavers, younger guys, cheaper guys, get those targets than I would Gabe Davis, because we know what Gabe Davis is. He's a 50-50 catch guy who in a lot of games is going to give you some solid run blocking, but is also not going to generate anything other than running a couple of clear out routes for Khalil Shakir across the middle. So I'm with you. I don't like the idea of the Gabe Davis reunion. JJ, let me ask you this question. The Buffalo Bills made a bold statement two off seasons ago where they did their version of the Red Wedding with this roster. Goodbye, Mitch Morse. Goodbye, Ryan Bates. Goodbye, Gabe Davis. Dane Jackson not re-signed. They part ways emotionally with Trey White. What does it say to you that the Buffalo Bills, less than a year removed from losing the AFC Championship, are now going back to the well on some of these guys that they got rid of?
I'm not as upset about it, because I think a lot of Bills fans are like, oh, here we go again. They see Sean McDermott as this kind of pushover who hires back talent that he has said he could walk away from. I'm not as much in terms of being upset of those sorts of signings, mostly because, you know, I look at the dollars, right? I'm always looking at the money. Gabe Davis walked away for a major multi-year contract with guaranteed money. If he comes back, I can guarantee you the Bills are not paying him more than $2 or $3 million per year. It's going to be a lower tier veteran kind of minimum deal. If they pay him over $3 million a year, I'd be absolutely shocked, because they don't have, with the new injection of talent they have in the wide receiver room, people that are young that they're excited about, they don't have the need to like throw that kind of money at that room. The same with the Trey White contract. I think is it $5 million a year or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the neighborhood. And so it's the same thing, you know, top of the market starting cornerbacks are making $20+ million per year. And they signed Benford to a big deal because he's a top five corner in the league. Trey White coming back is just an opportunity to see if there's anything left. And I think that that's, you know, I know that it was emotional to let go of some of these leaders of the first era of the Sean McDermott Buffalo Bills. But it's also the kind of thing where like, yeah, well, if spending a few mil of your salary cap to see if a veteran has anything left who you know and love and had good success in your building, not a problem with it. I don't think it shows any sign of weakness. I don't think it's anything that would is a detriment to the team, because the core of the young talent on the roster has been locked up. This summer, spending, you know what, like $500 million or something in overall money to lock up your youngest, most talented draft, develop, and re-sign players to the next 4 years, that's the story for me. All these other kind of, hey, yeah, come back in, we'll check you out. The only one I wouldn't be super fond of is Jordan Poyer, because watching him play last year, right? Like, cooked. It was not. Yeah,
love,
it was,
love all pro po, but cooked.
Oh, yeah. I know. He's one of our favorite players, but he was bad. And so it's pretty similar with Gabe Davis. I think that he was a slow receiver who was bad at catching the ball, and he's gotten slower over the last 2 years.
So. Yeah. And I track similarly with you. When I saw the Dane Jackson and the Trey White signings in the offseason, my immediate thought was, oh, here we go, trying to raise the floor without raising the ceiling. But I was actually heartened. And my first thought was, you know what, they're going to find an excuse to give Trey snaps in camp over Maxwell Harrison. But I was pleasantly surprised at how much they were trying to force Harrison into those first team reps, and how hard Trey was pushing him and moving him along in that process before they both went down with injury. The Gabe Davis one, to me, honestly, is the first one where I'm like, this one seems like a panic move. They seem nervous about this wide receiver room, and it could stunt the growth of some of these younger players that they have said after that Red Wedding-esque two off seasons ago roster purge. They have said they've wanted to commit themselves to these younger players at these positions. He's the first one where I'm like, that one actually feels like it could hurt meaningful development in a couple of guys in that room, right? So no, I agree with you. I think it's been responsible, and I think it's convenient for Bills Mafia fans to say, oh, well, you know, being a McDermott, they've got a comfort zone. I think their comfort zone is they like to know they're going to win 10 games. And the guys that they've brought back raise the floor to that point where they can. Does it get us over the hump, as we have talked about? No, not always. But it gives us stability with the roster and with the overall potential success of the team that we haven't had in a really long time. So the Gabe Davis one, I'm kind of out on with you, but the rest of these moves, yeah, I there's no other tea leaves I think you can read from this other than the Bills want to fortify positions that they know they're weak at. JJ, a position the Bills are not weak at is quarterback. And the last bit of camp news here coming out of camp today is that Josh Allen will, for the first time in his career, not take a snap in preseason. He will not be playing in the preseason finale against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. JJ, big deal, no deal, little deal that Allen won't see any snaps until week one against the Ravens.
It's a no deal until it's a big deal. And what I mean by that is that if he comes out against the Ravens like he came out a few years ago against the Jets, threw two interceptions, basically lost the Bills the game, that preseason he also, I think he played one series and looked pretty poor, if I remember correctly. And that was the only preseason action he saw. And then he showed up for the Jets and seemed to have quite a lot of rust on him. But the reason I say it's a no issue until it's an issue is that if he comes out and plays what we expect from him as a NFL MVP and now what, $330 million quarterback, it's going to be fine. It's going to be not an issue. And I think that what it says to me is that Sean McDermott is strongly and has stated so many times, he runs this team in a way where you have to earn what you get. And he has no questions about Josh Allen's work ethic, his preparation, his accuracy, his attentiveness in practice, his knowledge in film study. Like, there's nothing else to do. There's nothing else that he needs to work on in a live game setting for the coaches and the team and his teammates, especially, to have confidence in him that he's ready to go week one. The question still remains, is he ready to go week one without any live snaps? As a player who used to ask Brian Daboll for a quarterback power run early in the game to get his feelings right about playing, right? Like, does he truly have what it takes to just kind of switch it on, switch it off at a moment's notice? Because I think if he does without any preseason reps, then of course you don't want to ever risk him in live bullet situations if you don't have to. He is the most valuable piece on the whole team.
Yeah.
And according to the AP writers, the entire NFL.
Yes. If Shakir was healthy and they still, those two, their chemistry still wasn't looking right in camp, I would say, you know what, maybe you want to give him a series or two. But Shakir's not healthy. He's been putting in a ton of work with Keon Coleman. They really seem to have developed a nice chemistry with each other this offseason. Josh Palmer has been on and off hurt. But him and Josh have been putting in a lot of work together. Curtis Samuel, not available. I mean, you're going to put him out there and he's going to throw to KJ Hamler and Tyrell Shavers. Like, it doesn't make any sense. That does not get you ready for week one when you're going up against the Baltimore Ravens. So I'm actually fine with this. You err on the side of caution. There is the risk that he comes out rusty. But to your point, this is a high caliber veteran NFL QB. Like, if you really need a live series against the backups for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to get you ready for week one, Sunday Night Football, the farewell season in Highmark Stadium, I just think there's something wrong on the player side. And with Josh Allen, we know that's not the case. So, yeah, man, put him in bubble wrap and then let's get the season started.
Well, anybody who saw the clip of Joe Burrow versus the Washington Commanders running in circles for like a 17-yard loss to be tackled by three 400-pound men on the goal line. That's the kind of competitor that Josh Allen is as well. He wouldn't look like such a doofus doing it, but you don't want him out there when there's no stakes, trying to make something out of nothing when his offensive line just olays a bunch of rushers through, which they wouldn't. I think they're a really great offensive line, but.
Yeah,
there's no reason, because you know he'd be willing to put his body on the line for situations that are completely pointless.
Yeah, kind of like Taron Johnson did in the first game against the Giants. I was watching film on that game, and the first couple of series that Johnson was in there, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, there are just guys that do not have an off switch.
Yeah.
Johnson's one of them. Allen's one of them. And if you're a coach and you know your guys cannot modulate in those situations, then absolutely you take them off the field.
Well, and another player who, I mean, we can get into when we talk about the roster that I'm excited about, who also doesn't seem to have an off switch, is Joey Bosa.
Oh my God,
He's been playing with, you know, his hair on fire like it's the AFC Championship game every week that they put him in for any snaps in the preseason. I'm just like, dude, slow down. Like, you're an injury, you know, somewhat injury prone mid-30s guy. Like, you're cruising for a literal bruising.
He has looked super impressive in camp, though.
Yeah, I'm excited.
JJ, that's a great segue. Let's start to talk about this roster a little bit. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Let's talk about pass catchers, because this is going to matter. And I say this knowing that it is like the most simplistic way to analyze the Bills' offensive chances this season. But we saw it at the end of last season, despite the fact that the Bills were rolling up workmanlike 30s game after game, they were facing a higher percentage of man, a higher percentage of cover one. The dream scenario that we have talked about for years in the Bills' offense needing to pull these opposing defenses out of too high shell situations. The running game got it there. The work across the middle of the field with Shakir got it there. We got the optimal defensive looks that we wanted to at the end of last season. They could not take advantage by attacking the boundaries or attacking downfield because of the limitations of this pass catcher room. JJ, this pass catcher room outside of Josh Palmer looks relatively the same as it did last season. The same squad that, while talented in certain areas, could not take advantage of some of the looks opposing defenses were giving them. So JJ, what's your read on this wide receiver room? It still needs to coalesce. It's pretty banged up. It's pretty injured heading into the season. But what is your take so far on what you need to see from this wide receiver room heading into the season?
The story of this wide receiver room is literally, it can be boiled down into two questions. Is Keon Coleman that guy? Does Khalil Shakir progress? Because I think that if you have last season's production from Khalil Shakir every season for the rest of his career, he'll go down as one of the top three wide receivers in Buffalo Bills history, right? Like, he reliable, you know, multiple touchdowns per year, 600-700 yards, closing on 100, you know, catches. That's going to get him the kind of career that leaves a legacy. And so can he progress? Can he like stay healthy? Can he keep this kind of production going? And then is Keon Coleman an outside receiver that NFL teams are afraid of? Does he develop into somebody who has that nasty run blocking we saw in the Seattle Seahawks game, who has that, you know, one-on-one jump ball acumen we saw in the Seattle Seahawks game, who has the route running and separation ability we saw in the Seattle Seahawks game?
He had, in fairness, more plays than just in the Seahawks game.
I know. I'm being unkind, but no, but you know what I mean? Like, he was on an incredible arc. He looked like he might be the steal of the wide receiver class from his draft until he got hurt. Then he had a wrist injury. And then when he came back, he was a ghost for like five or six games at the end of the season. Hopefully fully healthy, fully recovered, has looked awesome. This offseason, many of the beat reporters have reported that he is kind of rocked up. He looks like he spent a lot of time working on his strength, his conditioning. Not much he can do for speed. We know this, but he is probably the best jump ball person on the team. And if that's his way, then that's the way forward. We've talked about it before that Josh Allen throughout his career has succeeded with like the John Browns and the Khalil Shakirs and the Cole Beasleys. He hasn't had the like A+ tall, long, somewhat fast, you know, physical receiver that he's vibed with. They've tried. They've had attempts at that body type, but it hasn't worked out for him. He had some hand in selecting Keon Coleman in the draft. He gave his preferences to Brandon Bean, and they chose the guy that is reported that he wanted. And so this is his chance to make that pick worthwhile. And it's also Coleman needs to be in the right position. He needs to work on some of those big boy plays that he was brought in here to do. And if he progresses to that level, I think that is an answer to the two questions of, is Khalil Shakir consistent, and can Keon Coleman step up and be, you know, top 16 wide receiver in this league? If he can, I think they're going to be fine, because I think that the other players, the, you know, whomever they keep of Elijah Moore, KJ Hamler, Curtis Samuel, I think that there's some questions about if Curtis Samuel could be moved because of the money. But you know, LaVisca Chenault, like, do any of them make any sense as role players? I think they do. They all have kind of unique, different skill sets. And Josh Palmer is definitely going to be on that field based on what they paid him. And he seems to, Joshua Palmer feels to me like a younger version with slightly less talent than Emmanuel Sanders. Like, that's the type of player.
That's actually a cold yeah. analysis right yeah. there of his skill set, but accurate.
Right.
Accurate.
Yeah. Those, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they got Emmanuel Sanders at the end of his career. They both are somewhat route technicians who've not had kind of blazing speed as their calling card. And Josh Palmer has an opportunity to be something special He's played with a very good quarterback for a number of years and never stepped into like that 80 plus catch territory. Here's his chance, right? I think he's going to get opportunities, but it's really what can he make of them? But from what I've seen just in like the few, you know, from the snaps, from preseason games, from the heat coming out of practice, is that he's like a better route running version of Gabe Davis with better hands, which some Bills fans are like, okay, really like that, right?
I want that.
But at the same time, there's nothing kind of spectacular or special, right? He is the low fat vanilla Greek yogurt in my fridge of this offense. It's reliable. It's going to get you over protein goals. I'm not super excited about it.
God, I miss these analogies. Oh my God, you have no idea. I feel like I have been gaslit by multiple media members into thinking that Josh Palmer is some sort of route technician, amazing separator downfield. I've watched his film. I have gone to every stat package that I know of, PFF, Next Gen Stats, Reception Perception, love Matt Harmon and his whole outfit there. I have looked over it all, and none of the hard, cold facts tell me that Josh Palmer is, in fact, a separation specialist. His most successful route that he runs per EPA per play and success rate is a dig route across the middle of the field. That's it. He's not really a field stretcher and never has been, despite a couple of limited highlight reel catches that he's made for touchdowns. He, to me, seems like the piece that I'm the least excited about, because folks are talking with him like he's already this realized product, that he's got another arc to his development that he can hit, and maybe he can hit it in Buffalo. You know, I mean, maybe he was limited because of all the coaching changes and offensive coordinator changes in LA. But by the same token, like, what you put on film is what you put on film. What you put in the box score is what you put in the box score. And this has not been a guy who's been anything other than a low floor, low ceiling wide receiver 4 throughout most of his career. And we have locked him in to a top 2 or top 3 outside wide receiver position and paid him money akin to that. This one to me feels like an overread. Like, this one feels like we fell in love with the idea of Josh Palmer in the offseason, but didn't realize who Josh Palmer actually was. He's the one I'm most interested to see, but I'm the least excited for, if that makes any sense, because I feel like I know what he is. Coleman, dude, if he can take that, we just need one of these darts to hit. One of these pieces of spaghetti we're flinging at this outside wide receiver position to hit. Because if you just have one guy who's a reliable threat, all of a sudden those cover one situations, you're not floating an extra safety into the box. You're floating them to bracket your outside wide receiver threat. And that's going to open up things across the middle of the field for the Buffalo Bills. So we need some version of Coleman, Palmer, Shavers, if he makes this roster, to be effective in that role. And we just need, again, 33% chance to hit. That's all we need. And that's all I'm hoping for. But my money's on Coleman because of the youth, because of the clear upside, and because of the development he's had this offseason.
Well, the heat around Tyrell Shavers is not the same as, like, I'm reaching pretty far back into the bag with this one. It's not like the Chris Hogan, you know, tribe from years ago, or like the Justin Shorter tribe of the last couple of years.
Andy Isabella.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's always that, like, training camp darling who people who went out and looked in the stands saw him run a couple one-on-ones against a sixth rung CB and look hot. They're like, oh my gosh, he's going to be the next star. It's not that. Tyrell Shavers has pretty consistently been producing anytime he's had an opportunity, including last year, like one snap, one target, one catch, 80-yard TD or 56-yard TD or whatever it was. I hope that what we see tracks consistently with his presence in the meeting rooms and the practice field in a way that he can actually offer this team something. And I know your note on him is like, oh, is he, you know, are the Bills going to like not utilize him just because he doesn't check all the boxes of being a four-phase special teamer like somebody like Mac Hollins did last year, right? Like, is he not, since he doesn't fulfill that need, is that why they're gonna like bounce him, try to bounce him back to the practice squad.
Or someone like Gabe Davis does, in fairness, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, essentially, I feel like if they try to move Tyrell Shavers onto a practice squad, they will lose him.
Because oh, yeah. he's, I think, not clearing waivers.
He's put enough on film at this point in his career that some team's going to take a flyer on him with an empty wide receiver cabinet. So that's a different one for him, for me, and I hope they don't mess this up. Because, like, honestly, you hired a seasoned, for the first time in McDermott's tenure, he hired a seasoned, experienced special teams coordinator. Give that guy chicken crap and have him turn it into chicken salad. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's you don't have the luxury of messing around with the two phases that are on the field the most, just to favor your special teams coordinator having the best pick of who he wants. Don't sacrifice the offensive defense for it. Like, just don't. I don't care if the Buffalo Bills gunners are not the best gunners in the league. Give up a kick return here or there. If your offense is putting up, you know, 30 points a game and you're scorching everybody, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, no. My ideal version of this wide receiver room, and this will be my last thought before we move on, because I want to talk about some of the rookies on the defensive side of the ball, is Coleman, Shakir, a healthy Shakir, God willing. Palmer, not because I'm super excited, but because, like, we're kind of locked into that, right? Elijah Moore, who I think has earned a spot this season, and he can be that reliable kind of gadgety backup to Khalil Shakir if need be. Fifth, Tyrell Shavers. I absolutely think he's earned a spot. And if the Bills go as deep as sixth, six wide receivers, I love what KJ Hamler has done the past couple of off seasons with the squad. I think Hamler outside, has a better shot of clearing waivers than Shavers does. So he could be back on the practice squad theoretically. And I think the Bills might take a shot at that. But to me, Shavers for sure is wide receiver five on this team. Curtis Samuel is like a cut trade situation. He's injured. He's a duplicate skill set, and he doesn't give you anything in higher leverage moments you're not already going to get from Khalil Shakir or Dalton Kincaid, a guy who we haven't talked about yet as part of this pass catcher group, who is having a great training camp and really looks like he is fully healed from whatever ailed him last year injury-wise.
I have the same kind of wide receiver room that you do, except I would actually put LaVisca Chenault over KJ Hamler.
For
I just think
returnability.
Yeah, for that reason. Like, and that's not me sacrificing, you know, offense for special teams. Rather, I think that the returnability he offers is quite a bit better than some of the other options on the roster. And he showed with the 2-point conversion and some other things that he can be relied on in some high leverage situations. Kind of being where he needs to be, has an interesting physical skill set that I think really helps in special teams. So that's the only change I'd make, though, over the your kind of top five.
I like it. No, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
All right, man. Let's talk defense. Specifically, let's talk these defensive rookies that the Bills have brought in. We've already covered Maxwell Harrison. He's hurt. Yep. TJ Sanders, Deion Walker, Landon Jackson, Dorian Strong, Jordan Hancock. All the defensive rookie picks that the Bills made here this offseason in the draft. JJ, who has stood out the most to you based on what you've seen on film and via camp footage here this offseason?
It's definitely TJ Sanders. I think that far and away, he looks definitely deserving of the kind of heat behind that selection. I think that, you know, when we were leaving the draft, I think we were both really excited about Harrison Sanders. I was not as excited about Deion Walker. I was extremely excited about Landon Jackson, who you literally forgot when you were putting together our show notes that he was a human person who lived and played football. And in my notes, as you saw, I was like, Dan forgot he exists. And that's all you need to know about his camp.
He's at a weird camp. Yeah. Jackson's at a weird camp.
Landon Jackson, or if you're a fan of Barry Noho Hank, they look the same. Look it up.
This is true. I'm a fan of that. Look it up. Reference.
Solid actor and okay football player so far. Seems like a really sweet guy. But he looked absolutely a bit. He looked like he didn't deserve to play in the league against the Giants. He followed that up by looking meh against, you know, a very poor effort at the Bears. So Landon Jackson, we know defensive line, defensive end, offensive line, tight end, like those positions are all some of the most difficult to learn on the field, besides safety and quarterback, right? Like, so his presence has not been felt. And I still think he has a really good series of traits. He's done some good things in practice settings that you're impressed by. But he really needs to kind of put it all together. So yeah, Harrison, we don't know. TJ Sanders, awesome. I'm so excited to see him lined up next to Ed Oliver, because I think that is a pretty nasty rush package. You cannot double both of them with Joey Bosa and Greg Rousseau on the field. And golly, I want to see that.
Fixes our 3rd-and-7 problems from last year when we could not get off the field. Yes.
Right.
Big time.
Excited about that. I hope everybody stays healthy, because that is a rush that actually might work.
No, I agree with you. I'm super excited to see that specific package rolled out in that specific scenario. Yep. I mean, listen, I watched some of the film from the Bears game, and you know, Sanders and Walker are both getting blown off the ball on the run game, but that was not the strength of either of these guys. The Bills, again, they're going to do the it takes a village approach to stop the run game, because they don't care if they give up 4 yards on a first down rush. They don't want to give up 7 or 8 yards, which is where it becomes a problem. They want to put teams in 2nd-and-6, 2nd-and-7 situations, and hopefully get them to 3rd-and-5, 3rd-and-6. That's their bread and butter. And then they want to work with a lot of these penetrators they have along the defensive line to get pressure on the QB. They tripled down on that with the draft this year. And I think we're going to see similar frustrations to the run defense that we saw last year, although with a healthy Milano and with Dorian Williams maybe coming in some base package, there could be some improvement at the second level, at least in the run game. But I think we're going to see a run defense that is largely the same. But I will take that if the pass rush in higher leverage situations is even 70% better than it was last year. And it looks like it can be with this rollout. I want to ask you, though, the apology card that you're going to write to Deion Walker for trashing him after the draft, is it going to be handwritten? Will it be typed? Will there be personal notation in there about how sorry you are because he looks so good this camp season?
Listen, we recently bought some cost prohibitively expensive beeswax crayons for our son, for our toddler.
Nice.
And it would probably be a hand-drawn card if I needed to make one. And I'm reserving my need to make a hand-drawn apology card to Deion Walker for being trash until after he plays actual meaningful football. Because fair what enough. I saw in the preseason was like 4 snaps of him flashing, shouldn't be able to move this hard or fast big man's, you know, maneuvers. And then 40 snaps of him getting absolutely toppled like a pile of Legos.
Yes.
Because he was too high in his 6'7" frame to have any kind of leverage and was getting doubled and pushed back 7 yards. So he is, to me right now, his status is Jordan Phillips without the like flashy charisma. So
fair enough. I think we had a misconception, and I'm talking the royal we, the collective of Bills Mafia. When we saw 6'7", 331, we were like, finally a run gap stuffer, right?
Ted Washington reincarnated.
Exactly.
Still alive.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you tune up some of Walker's 2023 Kentucky tape pre-injury, 7.5 sacks that season, pure pass rush penetrator. I mean, that's really what this guy is. He's never been a plus run defender, but if the Bills can teach him how to anchor better, right? If Ryan Nielsen, our new defensive line coach, can work with this athletic mold, this athletic Adonis that Deion Walker is, teach him how to anchor better in the run game, you now have somebody who's a plus run defender and a ridiculously hard to blow off his spot penetrator in the pass game too. I mean, that's why I say they triple down on what they've wanted to do for so long in the penetration game and pass rush, because Walker brings that to the table too, not just Sanders in this draft class.
Yeah. And I will draw him a picture of him and Josh Allen walking into the sunset, holding hands.
Please. I can't wait to see it.
That you can use that card as a promo. I'll put that together. If we're like week 3, week 4 of the season, and I'm like, okay, this, when he's on the field, I can feel it, I could see it, and he makes a difference. Boom, bam. I will make that card, and you can drag my name wherever you need to.
I will never drag your name, sir, but I look forward to seeing your hand-drawn artwork for one Dion Walker. All right, real quick here, because we're running out of time. Any thoughts on Dorian Strong, Jordan Hancock? To me, Strong, promising, but he's not quite there yet. I don't think he's going to be the Christian Benford that we all hoped he would be. But Jordan Hancock, friggin' Swiss Army knife, man. He looks really impressive along that defensive secondary.
Yeah, I think when you see Jordan Hancock, he was like the only player in the Bears game that I noticed on the field. And I was like, oh, that's a good rep. Oh, that's a good rep. Like, he looks like he knows what he's doing in this defense.
Oh, yeah.
And that he has the kind of trigger and instincts to fire downhill and do what he needs to. He excites me more in run defense than pass coverage right now, but I think that could come for him. He has the skill sets and the traits. I'm not too worried about him. Dorian Strong, too, I'm just like, okay, just let this be another Christian Benford. Maybe diet Christian Benford, because Christian Benford stepped on the field and literally just took the starting job and he never relinquished it. Right. Like, he just
blew the doors off Kyrie.
He just quietly walked in and planted his flag as one of the best corners in the league, drafted out of Villanova in the sixth round. And so Jordan Hancock, I'm excited about Chase Lunt to talk about offense. I think it's interesting because he had only ever played right tackle, and then they started him in the Giants game at left tackle.
He played right guard. Yeah.
And he didn't do a bad job at either. I mean, his, you know, he's T-Rex arms, Chase Lunt, is seemingly getting it done. And the thing with offensive linemen is, like, if you even have a sparkle of understanding, Aaron Cromer is going to make you serviceable. That is the case, right? Like, that's, since they brought it back Aaron Cromer, I have not been concerned about the offensive line. I'm like, it's gonna be fine. If they don't renegotiate, if they don't extend David Edwards, if they don't extend Connor McGovern, and they bring in Cedric Van Pran Granger at center and move Alec Anderson to guard, I'm just like, okay, cool. Fine, let's rock with it. Like, that's a good line too. You know, I'm not worried at all about it. And then I think Caden Braithwaite was actually released.
Yeah. Yep,
yeah, gone. So he's gone. But yeah, so I mean, as for the rookie class, I think that there's a lot. I'm waiting to see a lot more from Deion Walker, Landon Jackson, and Harrison, of course, because he's been hurt. TJ Sanders seems awesome. Dorian Strong, Jordan Hancock, also great. Chase Lunt, pretty cool. I'm cool with those guys. I don't think, looking at the class, there's anybody that I'm like, oh, that's probably the really, really bad choice. But we'll see.
We will see. And God, man, I mean, again, we talked about it. This last draft class was maybe my favorite that Bean has done since the Josh Allen draft. But when you turn the clock back and you look at the 2024 draft, I want to talk about bubble guys for a minute here. There's a few names from the 2024 draft, I feel like, that are on the bubble here. Starting with, I think, Dwayne Carter.
Yeah.
It was not a good sign for him when Larry Ogunjobi was signed to the squad. And then the Buffalo Bills literally double dipped at defensive tackle with TJ Sanders and Deion Walker, guys who have pliability at both of the positions, one tech and three tech, that they were trying to coach up Carter to take over in some backup capacity. He is just in a season and a little bit more of football. He has not looked good. And I don't know how to put it any other way. He just athletically looks outmatched. Yeah. Yeah. Processing speed, which was a highlight of his in college, very, very slow at the line of scrimmage. He just looks like he has one foot out the door at this point.
So if people haven't been super nerds for this in the past and want to do a fun exercise, just go and go on Wikipedia and look at the history of drafts, right? Like, just pick any random span of years, pick 5 years in the 90s or 5 years in the 2000s. And look at every single player drafted and look at the number who have small denotations of whether or not they made a Pro Bowl in their career, whether or not they made, you know, like, people who are like at this point out of the league because of the years have moved on. Right. It will hammer home what a crapshoot the NFL draft is. There are plenty of first rounders who don't make it to a second contract. There's a reason the average length of a career in the NFL is 3 years, right? Like, there's so much talent and opportunity coming out of the college ranks that never actualizes because the speed of the game, the complexity of the game, the physicality of the players at that level, injuries, all kinds of different contexts, politics in the locker room. There are so many ways you can find your way out of the league. And unfortunately for Dwayne Carter, it looks like this is a level of football that he wasn't meant to play. Based on his game tape from last year, based on everything we've seen this year, based on the fact that at the end of the Bears game, he was still on the field for the last 30 or 40 snaps as one of the last defensive linemen. When they're literally scraping the bottom of the barrel with guys who were signed off of other teams, you know, or undrafted rookie free agents signed who were cut by other teams that same week, are playing there next to the Bills' previous third round pick. So, it doesn't look good for him. Like you said, it didn't look good with the moves that they made in the offseason to bolster the line. Zion Logue was taken off the field against the Bears before Dwayne Carter. He's been a bubble fringe player, still is, but I wouldn't be absolutely stunned if Zion Logue got a roster spot over Dwayne Carter.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked by that either. I can't help but let my brain go to this place because I've got a lot of time on my hands, but let's think back to last year's draft. We talked about Cole Bishop already.
I don't want to. I don't want to do this exercise. I know where you're going. I don't want to go there.
Cole Bishop has seen his struggles. It may not be the prince that was promised at safety. Keon Coleman, let's say for, you know, negativity's sake, he doesn't take the next step and he ends up being Kelvin Benjamin, as you've referred to him a couple of times. Now you're cutting Dwayne Carter. The first three rounds of that 2024 draft look markedly ineffective. And then you add to that a guy like Edifuan Ulufoshio, who I feel like is also better chance than not making this roster, their fifth round linebacker pick from that draft. What are you really left with? You've got Ray Davis, right? That's about it.
You may have Ray Davis, Cedric Van Pran Granger as a potential future NFL starter. Mm-hmm. Tylan Grable, who's another bubble player. I think he's bubble only because he's been injured.
Yep.
Because he won the swing tackle job last year. And so there's a chance that he's a good pick. Javon Solomon. What are we doing here, Javon?
I know.
Yeah, he has at times we have both been like, oh, that's a good rep. Like, that's a nice looking, because he's a small speed edge rusher type. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know that there are four players I want to see ahead of him in every game, right? Like, I want to see Russo, Bosa, Michael Hoyt when he's back, and even Landon Jackson to get snaps over Javon Solomon.
And so, don't forget AJ Epineza too.
I always do, except for that one play that he has each year where he like tips an interception to himself and gets a touchdown. Like, because he's easy to forget. Because that's it, right? Like, that's, it's like, oh my gosh, AJ Epineza is on this team. He did something. Oh, well, yeah, guess we'll hear from him again in 6 weeks. Yeah.
Two first round picks in AJ Epineza for Micah Parsons.
100%. Do it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Ran out.
Throw Curtis Samuel into the mix too.
Yeah. No. Before James Cook signed his deal, I would have thrown him as well. Like, just come on.
Anybody. Anybody. Micah Parsons.
Just gotta have somebody who, like, I know every year is going to get you 10 plus sacks. I just know it. Right.
Seriously.
Like, it's why over the offseason, when, you know, the few times we were talking football over the offseason, Miles Garrett was like, you know what? I want to play for a winner. And then they're like, beep, beep, beep. Here's a truck full of money. He's like, never mind. during that time, I was very much like, spend whatever you need. Spend everything. Get right. That guy.
Yeah. Right. Don't sign anybody back except Josh Allen to get
Josh
this guy.
Allen, Miles Garrett, Super Bowl. Boom.
There you go. That's what you need. Yeah. Oh, man. Man, we covered a ton of ground here today. We covered news, all of our camp thoughts, and now we are ready to watch the final Bills preseason game here this weekend before we get into the regular season stuff, man. It is great to have you back on the pod, I got to say.
Thank you, brother. I'm so happy to be back. And I'll say this to all the Bills Mafia watching the preseason game this weekend against the Buccaneers. In a truly rare and exciting opportunity to play a team in the preseason that you also then see in the regular season, expect even less game planning scheme or starters than you saw against the Bears. And don't panic if the Buccaneers play their first and second string in tune-up and the Bills get absolutely walloped for like a 42-0. None of it matters. There's people that were like slamming the panic button in my like guys Bills friends chat last weekend, and I was like, the Bears beat the Bills like 32-6 or something last offseason, and then they ended up proceeding to go 5-12 while the Bills were in the AFC Championship game. This means nothing.
It means less than nothing. Yeah. Literally posted that on our socials. So I was like, oh, here's the headline from the last time the Bears beat the Bills in the preseason. Last season. Remind me how this worked out for both of these squads.
Yeah. Caleb Williams is probably still going to be the most sacked quarterback in the league. The Bears are probably not going to go anywhere. And the Bills are probably going to be vying for the number one seed in the AFC yet again. Like, that's, come on, people. Like, let's look at the prior results instead of the preseason.
Yeah, man. Although I do think the Bears are going to be okay. And I think, dude, I have so many hot takes we need to unpack on the pod. Yeah. One of them is, I don't think the Packers are going to make the playoffs.
That's a good one. Yeah.
We need to unpack a lot of that stuff.
We need to do around the whole around the NFL piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. But on a future pod, my friend, thank you for all of you listening at home. Like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your pods. We are on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.